Water is the foundation of life. Walking hours each day to access this basic need is a hardship no one should endure. That's why Global Grassroots, an organization that catalyzes women and girls as leaders of conscious social change in East Africa, helps women create their own sustainable water enterprises in their communities. What happens when you invest in women? They invest in their communities. And the ripple effects, immeasurable. From eliminating violence and exploitation to generating resources for families and ensuring that girls attend school, these are just a few of the things that can happen. What we know is that investing in women works, and Global Grassroots is doing just that. We invite you to join us today at www.globalgrassroots.org. And welcome to the Inspire Your Life podcast series. I am your host, Aarti Rabikrisoon, and I am the founder and MD of Prerna Advisory, based in South Africa. My philosophy and that of my business is to inspire others to make step changes that changes their lives purposefully and productively. Therefore, I coach, consult, capital raise, and partner with all you crazy, beautiful people in the world to make that happen. Joining me on the episode today is Gretchen Key-Steidel. She is the founder and president of Global Grassroots, which operates a mindfulness-based social venture incubator and women's leadership program in post-conflict East Africa. She's also the founder of Circles for Conscious Change, which is a transformative education-based organization working with social entrepreneurs, nonprofits, and corporations on the use of mindfulness as a design tool for social innovation. Gretchen believes that cultivating inner awareness and contributing to the common good are both necessary to advance the greatest level of positive social change. It's such an important place to be at. Now, Gretchen, you know, from being an author, an Emmy-nominated documentary producer, an MBA graduate even, to also being a certified breathwork practitioner who assists women and children to heal from the traumas of war, disaster, and gender-based violence in countries such as Rwanda, Haiti, the US, and Uganda, Gretchen's experience is truly multifaceted. She's so purposeful in her work, and her insight into human nature, suffering, and also the potential for excellence is absolutely undeniable. It's no wonder she's been named on various lists for her remarkable work and is sought after globally for talks and workshops about mindfulness and social change. Gretchen, you're truly a remarkable woman, and I'm so fortunate to know you. Welcome to the Inspire Your Life podcast today.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be here.
I'm so happy that you're here and that you actually get to share some of your insights about your journey of self-discovery that's actually led you down the path of affecting the kind of social change that you have. But before we get into it, let's actually start to get to know you a little bit more, Gretchen. So please do share some of that with us.
Thank you. Well, I was born as part of we call ourselves Navy brats, part of a military family in the United States. But that resulted in my traveling and living in many different parts of the world as a young child. Mm-hmm. It, as I might have a chance to share more, was really inspirational for me in the work that I do now. But I started off my life and career with a very conventional approach and set of expectations. I got a degree in foreign affairs. I took my first job in international investment banking and finance. I got an MBA. Mm-hmm. And then when my job was rescinded due to the financial crisis in 2001, mm-hmm. I finally had the space to ask myself, what do I really want to be doing out there? I'd sort of followed this expected path. Mm-hmm. And after that, I started down these two completely unrelated paths that eventually merged into what I do now, which I call conscious social change. Right. One path was one that involved social entrepreneurship and my fascination with innovation used for social impact around the world, and just the courage and resourcefulness I see of so many amazing change agents. And the other path was one I took on for my own stress management as sort of this type A stressed out personality. And that was breath work and mindfulness. Wow. And I underwent such a powerful transformation of my own that it led me through many a journey to find what my true purpose was and how I could blend the inner work with the social change work in something that I've been pioneering the last 20 years that I call conscious social change.
It definitely sounds transformative. I mean, I'm being transported as well as you're talking about, you know, all of these different elements that have shaped you, that have brought you to where you are today. And especially over the last 20 years, as you said, that amalgamation of the two. I would love it if you could share some detail about that first experience that started you on the path towards this self-discovery and purpose with our listeners today.
Thank you. I still have these amazing images in my mind today. Mm-hmm. I was 9 or 10 years old. I was living in the Philippines, where my father was stationed in his military career, going to an international school. And one of the programs they offered us was the chance to do an exchange program with another student of our same age in a local fishing village in the rural Philippines. Mm-hmm. And I was really shy as a child. So I remember being terrified, but fascinated, and ended up spending a week living with a family in their home without my own family. So this mm-hmm. was one of my, and we didn't speak each other's languages. So that was terrifying as well. I went to school with her. I ate meals with the family. I slept with them in their one room, Nipa hut. And I recognized the joyfulness and the freedom of this beautiful and very connected community. Mm-hmm. And though there was deep poverty, it seemed like there was very little lacking in terms of love and connection. Yes. So then when she came to my house, I was very excited, like most kids, you know, come and see my life and see my room and experience, you know, my life at that time. Mm. But she was so unhappy, and she wanted to go home, homesick, confused, and uncomfortable. Mm. And I remember leaving that experience with a very powerful insight that mm-hmm. continues to sort of develop over time. And that was that I understood that I had a certain level of privilege. Mm-hmm. And with that came a responsibility. I was very struck by poverty and the disparities between the life that I grew up as an American and what I was seeing in this rural fishing village. But I also was struck by the fact that I could not presume to know what other people wanted for their life. She didn't want my life. Mm, I needed to listen. I needed to stay curious and learn what my unique role might be to play.
Yeah.
And that this insight is what has driven me ever since.
Sure. That's a powerful insight to have at that age, you know, at age of 9, to have that sort of understanding. Very, very powerful. And I mean, you've mentioned you've traveled to so many different places. And I know that there's been very, very rich experiences from those travels. But fortunately, you also managed to travel to South Africa, to my part of the world. And as you mentioned in our previous meetings, that you actually had a pivotal meeting there that catalyzed you towards becoming the social change agent that you are now. I'd love for you to share that story as well with our listeners.
Yes. Thank you for asking. I attribute my aha moment for the creation of my organization, Global Grassroots, to an incredibly powerful meeting and exchange that I had with a beautiful woman named Zuleka Netuli in her home in the Khayelitsha Township outside of Cape Town in 2004. I had traveled to South Africa to understand the impact of HIV/AIDS and the sexual violence that is often associated with the spread of HIV/AIDS within South Africa, with the intention as a business executive, you know, someone with a business background and a finance background, I thought that the way to make an inroad into this challenge would be to convince corporate investors to put more resources into the work of innovative social entrepreneurs. So I traveled all over South Africa. I drove with my friends who accompanied me from Johannesburg and Pretoria to Durban down to Cape Town, meeting with executives and social entrepreneurs. And one day someone said, have you actually had a chance to talk with anyone who's really fighting these issues at the grassroots level on the front lines? And I hadn't, and I didn't know how to do that. And so they brought me to meet this amazing woman where she told me about her personal experiences within her community and the issue that she was addressing. And she felt so compelled to begin to work towards awareness around sexual violence and sexual rights, as well as issues related to the transmission of HIV/AIDS when a young girl who's 12 was sexually assaulted in her community by other 12-year-olds. And she had no formal education that I was aware of. And at the time, I don't think that she was employed as well, but she was using her own resourcefulness and her own skills to make beaded products that she sold to put herself through training to be an advocate and to inspire others in her community to join her. And when I met her 6 months into her work, she'd made such powerful inroads working with men and women across her community to start addressing these issues without necessarily the capacity to apply for grants to advance the work. And I realized in that moment, this is where change was really happening, that there were likely other incredibly creative and innovative women like Zuleka Netuli who could see clearly what was happening and what was needed, but may never have had the opportunity for the skills and resources to advance their own ideas. And that perhaps I could be of service to them in figuring out how to support them in advancing their own solutions. And when I left that meeting with Zuleka, I decided to start Global Grassroots in her honor and her work, and to find where I could be most effective in bringing that kind of support.
Wow. I mean, that is powerful in terms of the kind of insight that you got. And, you know, as you said, being able to see things happening at that grassroots level with barely any resources, and, you know, just using her own sort of resources, as you said, to get going. The fact that it struck you to create Global Grassroots, I mean, that's phenomenal and a very inspiring story. I'd love for you to share more about Global Grassroots with us and the work that you're doing, Gretchen.
Thank you. And if I ever get to meet Ms. Netuli again, I would love to extend my gratitude.
Absolutely.
So what Global Grassroots is doing, we're a global charitable organization, and we partner with emerging change leaders, especially women who have overcome significant challenges of poverty, have limited access to education, or are survivors of violence and war. And we support them in creating their own micro NGOs, their own nonprofit social impact solutions for their local community. We fully believe that these grassroots women know best what their communities need. They have the innate power to determine their own priorities and solutions, and we value them as our partners.
Yes.
And so to do so, we have our unique methodology and deliver that blends mindfulness and social entrepreneurship. And we deliver our program through a social venture incubator. It includes trauma healing, because we want everyone who is going to be at the front lines of social change to be as well as possible and to learn techniques that they can support others.
Yeah.
Second, we provide these mindfulness based leadership skills that support the inner work of stepping into the compassionate confidence and leadership that is needed to do this work well. Mm-hmm. Third, we provide the social venture planning tools to be able to create a viable, sustainable solution that will get at the root level of a social issue benefiting women and girls. And fourth, the seed funding to cover all the startup costs, as well as support and coaching over a year of operations to get to the point of self-sufficiency. Mm. We have a program for women that in Rwanda in particular that are working in teams to bring clean water access to their communities. And we have a program for young women across East Africa who participate in the gap year between their secondary school graduation and university enrollment to do community projects in their own local community. Mm-hmm. And so since our program started in 2006, we have trained more than 700 change agents who've initiated ventures that are now serving about 200,000 people.
Wow, that is incredible, incredible work. And it's very much a snowball effect, you know, to have started back then and now to be able to say that you've made such impact, and they are obviously paying it forward too in terms of the impact they're doing with their mini NGOs. That's wonderful, wonderful work, Gretchen.
Thank you.
And you know, it all for me goes back to finding purpose. And you know, that's what actually catalyzed you, because you were able to recognize your purpose at an early age. And, you know, from that age of nine, that dialogue sort of continued internally as well. Can you maybe give us a bit more insight in terms of how that dialogue around your purpose, around self-realization, how did that actually become reinforced through your travel experiences, and also help you understand leadership and social change and entrepreneurship as well? How did that shape you?
Thank you. I think I've always been drawn to experiential lived experiences mm-hmm. to teach me. Mm-hmm. And I've had the privilege of having the opportunity to visit a lot of different communities and to sit down and speak with or work with change leaders around the world who've helped me see the needs that exist, the opportunities that help me define ways I could live my purpose and contribute, still keeping in mind that sense that originated from the Philippines that I may have something to offer, but I am not the one that always knows what's best, that I need to listen first and I need to figure out how we partner. And so some of the things that have been powerful for me include an opportunity that I took to study in Thailand with an amazing woman named Oiporn Kwan Kyo. She's a female Buddhist monk who has been working on many fronts to help combat the ways in which religion has been used to rationalize violence and oppression. And helped me understand the intersection of spirituality and wisdom with feminism and social justice, that the inner work that we do is really essential to achieving real transformation.
Absolutely.
And so through her courageous work, I felt compelled to start exploring that for myself, to do more deeper work on my own. I've had a chance to learn how certain mind-body techniques can be instrumental in helping us achieve greater wisdom, especially breath work, how it can help the body reset itself after chronic stress or a traumatic experience. Mm. And for me, to help me get clearer on what is my deeper wisdom and purpose. Mm. So I've invested, inspired by these experiences, to go deeper in my own inner wisdom, and then to look at where change work can happen. I had a chance to make a film called The Devil Came on Horseback about the genocide that took place in Darfur, Sudan. Mm-hmm. And through that process, traveled to the Darfur refugee camps of Eastern Chad, where I met an amazing and inspired leader, Adam Musa, a dedicated teacher and educator who was working within his refugee camp in the middle of the desert. He was building a human rights library because mm-hmm. he wanted this opportunity to educate his community about the importance of human rights. Right. And there was no money to build a human rights library. Mm-hmm. So through his inspired work, he was able to convince people to share their minimal water rations that they would get daily for their own drinking, washing, cooking in a refugee camp, to allow him to make mud bricks, to build a structure
wow.
that they could come to gather, to learn from. Yeah. And that is inspired persistence.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I had a chance, to bring the breath work, healing work that I have had a chance to learn from some extraordinary doctors around the world to survivors of and frontline workers mm-hmm. in Haiti after their massive earthquake and in with genocide survivors in Rwanda and other survivors of violence. And what I've learned through those experiences was that we can heal. We can find resilience. And it is essential if we want to be able to manifest our purpose that we invest in our own well-being. So throughout these different experiences, I think it has contributed to my overarching focus that inner work and outer work are integral and support each other.
I mean, I'm actually, I'm thinking about the richness of some of these experiences that you've mentioned. The tenacity of the human spirit comes to mind as well. But, and as you've been talking, you've been talking about mindfulness and consciousness as well. And I think let's actually turn to that now, Gretchen, so our listeners can understand a little bit more about what mindfulness is, what's its impact on leadership and social change. So maybe sketch it out for us, this intersection, because it may be unclear as to how this is actually connected.
Yes, thank you. I guess it makes sense to start with a definition.
Yeah.
And the definition of mindfulness is actually pretty simple. And it is about paying attention on purpose in this present moment, but usually with this quality of curiosity or non-judgment. Mm. So it's basically taking the time to notice whatever's happening inside ourselves. That could include, my physical sensation or emotional state, or that my thoughts are ruminating about something. So we become our own observer, mm-hmm. but it also can be about noticing what's happening around us too, being more connected in that conversation I'm having, or to focus my attention on a sound or the leaves that are moving outside on a tree. Right. So there are many different kinds of mindfulness practices. What they do for us, and some of them do different things, but essentially these are forms of brain training. They have a tremendous amount of benefit to us that science is increasingly showing. And that includes things like reduced anxiety, decreased depression. Mm. We're able to regulate our emotions better the more that we are aware and self-aware. And we experience more positive emotions. Mm. We can handle circumstances and conflict with less anger. And we are better able with that self-regulation and self-awareness to understand and change ourselves where we want to evolve. Right. And that becomes the intersection with how this starts to matter for us as leaders, as change agents, and really just in relationship. Yeah. When we start building self-awareness through these kinds of activities, we start to recognize our own patterns of behavior that might have before been unconscious. And, that might be how we react to stress or how we handle discomfort. And then we have the power to begin to shift right. our behavior and our assumptions. By doing that, we're no longer on automatic pilot. We start to understand more what drives ourselves and also what drives other people's behavior. We kind of become a student of change from the inside out. Mm-hmm. And that especially is relevant to people who want to create social impact, that instead of going around telling everybody else what they need to do to change, we bring a different level of compassion and understanding to what it takes to really create transformation. Right. Now, we also become more effective in the relationships that we develop because we can pay attention better. We have more curiosity and compassion. And studies are showing that mindfulness reduces our bias and makes us open to more diverse perspectives. Mm. So we're going to relate better and connect better to people. And that's going to matter, especially as people feel supported by us, as we are able to understand issues more comprehensively, as we're going to work together, we become more altruistic and collaborative.
Yes.
And we start to be willing to look across diverse perspectives. And that's going to help inform us and support more comprehensive, holistic, and I think more effective solutions. Mm. And so as we build this level of inner awareness, it has direct impact on how we lead and relate to people, how we understand, and thus how we solve problems together.
Thank you. I think you've actually sketched it so beautifully and connected it so well that the inner work is actually what shows through in terms of impact that we put forward as leaders, as change agents, as you said. Okay, so how does one then actually become more mindful? Because people may have misconceptions about, you know, how much of time needs to be dedicated to it or what types of practices. And you've already mentioned that there's different ways, but how does actually one actually start in a way?
Great question. You really only need a little bit of time and day to try something. I suggest the minute you wake up, or taking a break throughout the day. You know, the average coffee break is 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. So when people take a break during work, instead, you could take a break for mindfulness. Mm-hmm. But what we do is we practice just noticing. A really simple practice is usually we want to sit and sit up straight because that allows us to not fall asleep or get distracted and to be really engaged. But if it feels comfortable to do so, we try to close our eyes so our attention goes inward or cast our gaze downward at something that's not going to distract us. Mm-hmm. And then we can bring our attention to our breathing. If you focus on your breathing, you might get distracted for a moment thinking about something. And then when you realize it, that you've been daydreaming, you come back to your breath again. And you just keep doing that. That actual process of switching there are two things going on. The focusing of your attention on something like your breathing and the switching of your attention back from something else are both forms of brain training. Mm. And as you notice your breathing, you might over time come to find some other insights in that process. You might notice that today my breathing is really constricted. And that might relate to certain stress I've been under. But tomorrow it might be deeper. And I might notice that I'm feeling more relaxed. And so it can become gradually a way of taking your own pulse on your stress level or what's happening for you in any moment. Mm-hmm. As you do this, watching your breath, what do you watch for? You watch for how deep it is. You watch for whether you pause or not. Mm-hmm. You can watch for how shallow or fast your breathing is, labored or easy. Mm-hmm. You just notice these little things. Notice how your body moves. What does it feel like in your nose? There's a whole lot to notice about a breath. And if you feel so inclined, then another step to the process would be to notice what I call our three centers, your heart, your body, and your mind. Mm-hmm. So after you sort of anchor yourself on your breath, take a little snapshot for yourself. What does my body feel like today? you might suddenly notice you are actually more tired than you realized, or you feel restless and you know that you need to go for a walk. You might then ask, what is my heart feeling today? And that is, what's my emotional state? I'm really wound up about something that happened in my workday. I'm worried about something that's happening tomorrow. You will have a chance to notice what is sometimes blind to us and affects how we react and respond to other people. Mm-hmm. And then we might notice the quality of our mind and our attention. Am I ruminating and worrying or replaying something? Am I planning for what's coming next? And how much is that distracting me from what's happening right now? Mm-hmm. The more you notice, then the more you can figure out what to do about it and do it from a more conscious place instead of from a reactive, unconscious place.
Right.
So that's really all we need to do. And again, mindfulness has that quality of curiosity and non-judgment. So we're just noticing whatever is happening.
I love that. I was actually being transported with your voice as you were talking. So that's incredible, because your voice actually is very soothing as well as you're talking about focusing on the breath and then noticing and watching how it gets deeper. And you make it sound absolutely simple. And it actually is. It really is. So mm-hmm. I do urge our listeners to consider it and, you know, try what Gretchen has actually outlined for us here. I'd love to know how you're using mindfulness in all these different aspects of your work and your personal life. And also, what lessons have you learned and continue to learn as a result? As you mentioned, you know, you're watching and you're listening and you're getting those insights. How is that evolving for you?
Well, you know, I think the skill that I just served continues to serve me, because whenever I am noticing that I'm starting to get triggered by something, I can mm-hmm. take that second to take a breath and, okay, what am I feeling right now? What do I need to do about it? And so in my personal life, using these moments of mindfulness, I am most of all, I'm learning patience, especially from my children.
Oh, good.
Yeah. You know, I'm learning how to communicate more effectively with them, even when I'm triggered. I'm learning what I need for my own self-care and recalibration. I'm learning how to identify and shift all the unconscious patterns of behavior, the fear, you know, the things that still come up now and then, the ego, and to learn how to live more fully and on purpose. Mm. I think, you know, just to constantly be checking in with myself. And then as far as conscious social change, we use mindfulness as an actual design tool. And when we start taking this inside out perspective, we are able to apply it in diagnosing core issues at the root and systemic level and getting beyond just the dynamics of what's happening to understanding the foundational issues that are underneath, like what's really going on with respect to people's resistance or fears or what's playing out. And as you use mindfulness and this inside out understanding, you can engage stakeholders mm-hmm. more easily in a collaborative process. You can mm-hmm. work together to define a common purpose. You mm-hmm. can build inclusive solutions. And through that, you're more likely to have this sense of collective ownership in the outcome. And that, we think, leads to greater impact and sustainability. So mindfulness is a practice and it's also a philosophy.
Yes, definitely. I can see how transferable it is actually from the individual level to a wider group, team, organizational level as well. Brilliant, brilliant. As you were talking, you know, what was just coming up for me was, you know, as much as you're transforming as well, and in all the different spheres that you're involved with, how are you enabling others to also give themselves permission to do this inner work too?
It's a good question, because I think there is still an existing perspective uh-huh. that doing any sort of inner work or well-being work is self-indulgent.
And selfish even.
Yeah. It, right. And so we have to model it, first of all, and we have to provide the spaces and the opportunities, the skills, the rationale, including the evidence and science behind it, for why it matters. Mm. And so I think the way that we do that, as an organization, Global Grassroots embraces inner well inner work and inner well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, we start every meeting with a moment of mindfulness, watching our breath. We practice this together in our facilitator trainings. We have well-being partners that check on each other and how we're doing. We have a well-being stipend that even supports staff for investing in their own needs. And so these kinds of things institutionally for us show that we're making a commitment to doing inner work. In the way in which we work in community, we work very carefully to not impose, but to create invitations and opportunities for people to explore this. We use an inquiry method in the way that we work with our teams so that we are very trusting of inner wisdom and trying to facilitate that so that people are drawing from that in the way that they're working. And I think just the compassion that we incorporate in the growth mindset allows us to use mindfulness to be better leaders as we go. And that inspires others to ask those same questions of themselves and to do the inner work for themselves too.
Lovely, lovely. And that's what's going to bring about the change and the impact that we're so needing all across the world, just by enabling that inner work to get started. Great.
I hope so.
So, I mean, looking back at all of these transformative experiences that you had, Gretchen, do you have any regrets or something that you wish could have been handled or done differently?
Oh, there's so many. There's always things that we could do better.
Yeah.
I think the more mindful you become, the more you're mindful that you're not mindful. But you know, I think that the general gist of these experiences that when I act out of fear or anger, it's never optimal.
Yeah.
You know, one example is in 2008 we had a big financial crisis in the U.S. And it shrunk our resources, and we were just about running out of money. And so I was afraid. I wanted to make sure that all our staff had enough time to find other opportunities if we were going to have to close our doors. And I let everyone go except for one person. And luckily they all found new things that are really aligned with their own sense of purpose. But I didn't have to make that executive decision myself. Instead, and as other organizations have done, there's a story about Patagonia, the clothing company, having done this as well. If I acted from a place of possibility and collaboration and inquiry and curiosity, all those things that mindfulness supports, I might have brought everyone together to say, what could we do about this? What's possible? How do we figure out how to continue our mission together under these limited circumstances? And we likely would have had a much creative outcome than if I just said, I'm going to, you know, terminate everyone's jobs.
Okay. And I mean, yeah, that can only come from the benefit of hindsight, right? But it's things that you would incorporate going forward in terms of those creative solutions and yeah, looking at the moment as an opportunity. It's that mindset shift as well. Yeah, I understand that. Okay. What piece of advice then would you want to share with our listeners about, you know, they're beginning or continuing on their own journey of self-discovery? How can they stay the course and keep pushing?
The one single sort of mindfulness practice that I would recommend everyone take with them is the practice of taking three breaths. And so every action, if it starts from a conscious place, is going to have its optimal impact. We're so quick to react and we are always on the go. But if we are able to create pauses, and this is if you realize you're getting angry, you take three breaths. And then with that spaciousness, we're able to disengage from our automatic reactivity, and we can be more wise. We can figure out, okay, what's going to work better in this circumstance to salvage this relationship, or to be able to say the right thing, or what do I need in this moment, and where is this coming from? It creates spaciousness and pause for us to see each other,
to be with each other, to hear each other. So I advocate for more breaths, conscious breaths and pauses, yeah. especially when you recognize that you are being triggered and getting reactive, and it will have enormous consequences for your stress response system and your ability to act with greater control and better outcomes.
The three breath pause. I think that's brilliant. I think it's brilliant. Absolutely. I'm going to be using that. Thank you. That's wonderful. And, you know, we've been talking about social change and, you know, your experiences. And I really hope that our listeners are feeling a little bit galvanized to action as well. So, you know, and maybe they're wondering, how can I participate? How does one actually become a social change agent? Give us some ideas, Gretchen.
Well, it starts with that noticing. So if we notice what calls us, what are the issues that we feel really passionate about, that or a population or a place that is continues to interest us or continues to concern us, then go and learn, ask questions, listen, sit and be in experiences with others that are affected by that. I feel like sometimes we go right to, how can I fix this? How can I act without learning and being with? And so where you can then understand as much as possible, you're more likely to understand where you have a unique contribution to make, because not because you have an agenda you want to impose or because you want to fix and save someone, but because you're meeting an actual expressed need in a partnership, in a collaboration that's going to matter. And so if we can start by being certain of our intentions, that we're doing this because it matters, and not because it just will make us feel good or add to our visibility, but that we have pure intentions and that we are doing this by aligning with our sense of purpose, our sense of what calls us and what people need, then we're going to be able to make a better chance at having an impact.
Oh. Beautiful, beautiful. So listeners, go out there, align with your purpose, right? It's actually not that difficult once we start noticing, as Gretchen has said. Gretchen, you know, we've had such a deep, enriching conversation, and we're pretty much at the end. I can't believe it. The time has just gone. What a beautiful conversation today. As a parting shot, I'd love it if you would share an inspirational quote or a lyric or something that actually uplifts you and, you know, motivates you to continue doing the work that you're doing, both on the inside and the outside. Please share that with us.
Thank you. I have a poem from Rumi that keeps me grounded and motivated that I'd love to share.
Please do.
I hope I'll do it the way it was intended and written. It's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if there are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So for me, this means that when things get really hard and when things get tough, or when I'm finding myself frustrated or like, I don't know why this failure or challenge is happening, I go back to listening and looking at each of these circumstances as an opportunity to learn. And to me, that brings me back into a place of alignment with my purpose. And in many cases, opens up a new opportunity I never expected.
Beautiful, beautiful words, and powerful too. And I think we can all take away different bits from that poem, actually. There were so many things that just resonated for me as you were reciting it, Gretchen. Beautiful. Thank you so much for joining me on the episode today. It's been a beautiful, enriching experience.
Thank you so much. It was an honor.
Oh, beautiful. All right. Take care, Gretchen. Thank you.
Thank you, Aarti. Talk soon.
Talk soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining me on this episode today. If you like what you heard, rate the episode and podcast, and feel free to write a review. Plus, of course, share with others too. I love talking around topics like these. So if you like my perspective or insight on a subject close to your heart, or something that you're grappling with, reach out to me in your comments or send me an email via my website, or connect with me via LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook. All my social media are on the podcast information. If it's important to you, then it's important to me. So happy listening to the Inspire Your Life podcast, and catch you soon on the next episode. Bye.